Hi, Broadway fans. Do you like to pee for free? In fact, check us out with You're in Town coming up next.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Broadway Breakdown.
What is You're in Town? You're in Town,
love...
the end.
Swim down. I think your intro just now was my favorite Broadway Breakdown intro. Do you like to pee for free?
I just love all the little voices that all the people do in this show.
Yeah.
Like, I love that no one in this show besides maybe Hunter Foster really has a normal voice.
Yeah, that is true. That is
all true. The girls have these exaggerated, like, either deep womanly voices or, like, the high-pitched young voices.
It's a show full of character actors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why
Which
I enjoy
is nice.
It.
Yeah. It's nice for character actors to get a show for themselves.
To get a spotlight once in a while instead of just, like... Here you are. Now we're going to pull you away and let the pretty singers sing.
Right, exactly.
Hi, everyone. Welcome
and
to...
And that's not to say the character actors aren't pretty. I'm just saying.
The pretty singing.
Right, the pretty
not
singing.
Not that... character actors can sing pretty as well, but oftentimes they get
They get the
songs.
Roles that... Or the roles that make them look ugly,
yes.
Even though they're not.
Welcome to Broadway Breakdown. I am your host, Brianna Phipps. You can find me at bphipps14 on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm 123 Jackie B on all platforms.
And like we said, we're talking You're in Town, the musical.
Spelled like you're in, like, P,
not like
you are
in
town. Which was a confusion on our last episode.
Oh, Allie, she was so cute.
I know, she was so confused. She was like, wait, you're in, like, you're here in town? No.
I mean, that's a whole different musical, probably.
Right. But I'm sure
it does sound like a good musical.
Well, I'm sure they meant that play on words too, because they're talking about how terrible the title is. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's that. They're just making that play
so,
on words.
So, You're in Town is a satirical comedy. Blah, I can't talk today. With music by Mark Hallman. I do want to talk about the music first because I feel like the music is what makes the show. So Mark Hallman wrote this great score that has so many different styles in it, which a lot of times with a musical, you get kind of one, like, you get different feels, but it all kind of melds together in this. Like, it goes off all the way. You have, like, gospel feeling.
I think that happens with satire musicals a lot. Like, when you look at Book of Mormon, there's a lot of different styles of music. But if you're looking at something like Les Mis, aside from the comedy numbers, a lot of the stuff is, like, those, like, heavy, open, like phantasmagorical numbers, you know. So I think that with satire, when you're trying to poke fun at something, you're able to create, like, this hodgepodge of different types of music.
Greg Kotas also helped write the lyrics and the book for the show as well, so I want to give a nod out to him as well. But this musical, like I said, we just talked about, like, the you get with satire, like, a lot of different feel. Like I said, we have gospel with Run Freedom Run. We have, like, the very Broadway feeling show soundtracks. We have the very, like, falsetto almost, like, Follow Your Heart, where she goes into, like, classic Broadway styling.
And then we have that cop number that, like, totally reminds me of the Officer Krumpke song from West Side Story.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
And I think, again, it's like, you're doing satire, so why would you not pick from a whole bunch of different types of Broadway?
And I know that there is, it's said that there was a song that was kind of based off Les Mis, which I was trying to think of which one it was, and the only one I could think of.
In the second act, it's like the battle song. They, when the song right before they do, like, the slow-mo, like, running off stage, they have, like, this marching kind of, like, battle
song. Yeah, that was, like, what I was going to say. That's the only one I could kind of think of what it was. And then you have, like, little Susie just being, like,
And I'm sorry I don't remember the name of that number. I'll look it up later, but
I have the song so I can look it up as well. But when she sings the song after he goes to Urine Town, and she's just, like, and he's kind of phantom. There's a lot of phantom singing in this musical as well.
There is, yes. Yeah.
Because we get his father and other people that have gone to Urine Town coming up, popping up here and there in the background. We have Bobby popping up in the background, so there is a lot of, like, this, like, ghostly feel to this show.
Yeah, I mean, well, you have this place that doesn't exist at all, which is, like, another theme for a ghost town, which, I mean, when I first heard of You're in Town, I was like, oh, it's like a Brigadoon thing with P. It is not like Brigadoon at all. It is not like Brigadoon at all. Just saying. Because in Brigadoon, the town actually exists. You don't just kill people.
Well, Greg Kotis had the idea for Urinetown and said while he was traveling in Europe, he was a student on a budget and he encountered a pay toilet.
I love this story.
And that is how he thought of starting this thing about, like...
This is my favorite story because looking up, doing the research for this, I read that anecdote. And before I even did the research and heard the musical, the first one of the first things, aside from the, like, sad Brigadoon thing that came to my head was when I was little, I lived in Germany, and there are pay toilets in Germany and a lot of other places in Europe. And that was the first thing I thought of when I heard the opening musical. Number. Or it's not the opening number, but one of the first numbers. So I was so pleasantly surprised that I'm like, oh, he literally did base this musical off of a paid toilet. Okay.
I thought of it because, like, growing up in San Francisco, there is also a lot of toilets that they're slowly making you have to pay in the public for because they don't want the homeless people just going in there and, like, sleeping in there.
You mean like a Starbucks kind of dealio where it's like you have to buy a latte?
No, they're actually outside.
Oh, okay, okay.
Like in, like, super touristy areas, they'll have, like, these outdoor, like, kind of porter potty toilets, and they don't want the homeless were going in there a lot to, like, take showers or just sleep or whatever, so they started, like, making you have to pay to use them.
Right.
And it sucks when you're in the city and you have to pee really bad and you can't pay because you don't have coins on you. And you only have a credit card, and you don't want to have to, like, go buy something from somewhere because they only let you use their restroom if you pay for something. Like, a lot of the restaurants,
right.
And it's like Starbucks, like you said,
right.
And it's all because of the homeless population. They, like, a lot of people just don't want the homeless coming in their area, so that's why they make those rules. But
in Europe, I'm sure it's a combination of that, and, like, a lot of the paid toilets are in, like, main tourist attractions, like old castles and stuff like that. So I think that a lot of it has to do with, like, the upkeep of the actual building as well.
Yeah. I mean, but it is kind of that. I mean, you kind of see that in the show. Like, the people that are using this public amenity number 9 are the poorest of the poor.
Right.
The people that are scraping by to try to be able to pee once or twice a day. And then you have Cladwell and his people that are living in this, like, completely rich and populated little business and are overtaxing people for peeing so they can have more money.
No, but I mean, this is also a different political statement. I mean, you could almost nowadays, and I know that a lot of their spoofs are on different types of things in politics, but the thing that comes most to my mind right now is healthcare, where you have the poorest people in the country paying, like, some of the highest premiums, and you have some of the richest people in the country, they don't have to buy healthcare at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that came to my mind, where it's like,
use this theme because we see this theme a lot happening in our own world in many different ways where people, I mean, like, you even look at food. Like, buying the food that's good for you is so expensive,
that
and then
true.
Buying the food that is terrible for you
McDonald's dollar menu is not good for you.
So, I mean, you constantly are seeing in our own society, which is why I think why he put this in here is because we're constantly seeing the people that have nothing being forced to use, like, the most terrible, worst things that they can to be able to get by.
Right.
And I'm still trying to figure out exactly how much they have to pay to pee.
I know. It would be nice to know. But I guess, like, in making the themes universal, you don't give a price because then you're like, that play was written in 2001.
Because you just hear her being, like, 500, like, her counting her pennies, 500. And I'm like, so how much? So $6? And then they, in the middle of the show, raise the taxes on the toilets. So
right. Which did remind me a little bit of Newsies, too. Where it's like, the Newsies have to pay an extra, I don't remember what it was, to buy their papers?
Living in California, it is a little, like, a scary thing to think, because we have been in a drought for years. That I'm like, what if it got to a point where you had to pay to pee?
I know.
Where they had
and
to,
as,
like,
women, you're naturally penalized because more women usually have to pee more. Just saying.
Especially women that have had children.
I know. That is true.
All my friends that have children have to pee, like, every 2 minutes. So.
Right. Especially pregnant women.
Which we have in the show. Which
right.
I think was just... I think her character wasn't supposed to be pregnant originally, but from what I read, the actress that was off-Broadway was pregnant.
Oh.
So the character became pregnant.
Which is funny because I saw a, you know, like, a local production where that actress, like, you know, basically it's a non-pregnant actress playing a pregnant character, so I wonder if they just were inspired by that.
I think when the show started, they had someone else step in, they gave her a fake pregnant belly because I think that the original actress gave birth and had to go maternity
leave. Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
But from then on, the character has been pregnant.
I like that. It gives it an air of diversity and, like, a reminder that, whether or not they meant to do this, but a reminder that, like, you're building a future for your kids and that if you don't do it right, the future is garbage. Which I did get a little depressed because it does seem to be that, like, everything falls apart in the end. And when you're a like, type A person like me, you're like, how could I have planned this better? Like, you're like, you want to help those people
because,
out.
Because you find that no way that you do this is the right way to do it with the situation they're in. Like, her father is overtaxing people and it's bad, but he's also creating a scarcity thing of where they're not using the water as much. And so it's sustainable, but then when she takes over and lets everyone pee for free, the water goes away really fast, and then they have nothing, and then they all starve to death.
I know, you feel bad because with climate change here and all, you feel like, is this our future? Like, drought and, like, paying for the toilet? Like, what is this? And then I had a little bit of anxiety watching it because I'm like, how can I help these people? How can I make it better for them? How can I fix this problem?
It's like you just, and that's, like, the whole construct that Bobby Strong has with Hope is, like, they want to help everybody, but in helping everybody you destroy everything,
right?
Which there has to be an answer. Like, I feel like there has to be.
Some of it, you know, obviously, like, with satire you take things to the most extreme level to make your point, but they did cover some things. Like, they have in the cop song, they have reference to, like, people being penalized for, like, sneak peeing outside, people being penalized for, like, using toilets indoors, which that was my first thought. I was like, what if people just use chamber pots? You can't bug somebody in their house.
But that's the whole thing, is that they're keeping track of if you actually go to these public amenities and, like, checking in on you if you're not.
Right.
To be like, well, you're not going to the public amenities, so where are you peeing? Because now there's a law that you're not allowed to do anything like that.
I know. And then I was like, what if they peed in the shower? These are things I actually thought.
I don't even think they take showers. Like, they have no water.
That is true. They don't take showers.
They probably just, like, find, like, a semi-wet cloth and kind of wipe themselves with it.
I think there was a reference in one of the songs to one of the characters, like, it was either using their urine as a shower or using their drink as a shower. I don't remember.
Something. Oh, she says she boils, she takes her bath now in a coffee cup and boils with what's left of it for tea.
That's what it was. It wasn't a urine shower. Let's erase that thought that I had.
She drank her bath water, which is also.
I do. There is a way to commend them for keeping up with the theme throughout, though, because all of the songs kind of tie back to the central theme in that they all make you think of urine somehow, which I admire that kind of dedication, because not all musicals, like most musicals, they have an A plot and then a B plot, you know, or a C plot, but this one it was like, no, all of this will tie back into the urine theme.
And it's like, I love that they break the fourth wall and talk to the audience about it. It's like, look at this place. This place is terrible. Let me tell you about how terrible it is, and let me do it in a funny way.
The one thing is, so you have that officer Lockstock as him and Sally as the people that break the fourth wall, the narrators. When you see the Broadway cast, which we'll show you later on in this show, It's hard because that actor, Jeff McCarthy, who plays the original Officer Lockstock, he has, and you were talking about this before we came on air, such a distinctive voice, like all of these people. Oh, no, you talked about it on air.
Yeah.
I forget what we say on air and off air. But he has such a distinctive voice that I would think it's hard, like the production I saw, the Officer Lockstock didn't have that kind of, like, booming narrator authority voice, which you really need.
Yeah.
So a lot of these roles, to me, you have to be a really good character actor with a really distinctive voice.
It is a production that you have to be very specific in who you're casting.
Yeah.
It can't just be someone that can sing.
Right.
This is a very, very big acting role.
Right.
In all of these.
I mean, like, even the girl who plays Little Sally, she has to have kind of that, like, cheesy Shirley Temple. Yeah. She has to have that cheesy, like, Shirley Temple meets Kristen Chenoweth kind of voice.
Meets Kristen Chenoweth.
Well, yeah, and the girl I saw, she had that kind of voice, but then the officer not having that voice didn't, like, it wasn't juxtaposed
this
right.
Little Sally was, I actually auditioned for her. The production never, ever got made because they couldn't find someone they liked to play Hope, and it was back when I was, like, first auditioning, and I was so nervous, and I think me singing in an audition was like, Like, you could barely hear me.
Yeah.
Because I was just so nervous. And I was like, I'm going to go out for little Sally. Because she only has to sing with other people. And
right.
She gets to, and the one song she sings by herself is like a talky song where she gets to just have a weird voice. Like, I can do that. It gave me like this hope that you could like be cast in a kind of big role, even if you were like not the best singer.
Well, I mean, look at Harvey...
Firestein
in Hairspray. I mean, he doesn't have the greatest voice, but that's an iconic role, you know. And I love that. I love that as a person who
but
can't
I feel like,
sing.
I don't know. Like, I feel like I've seen that with boys, but like it's rare
right.
to it see
is,
it with girls.
It is rare to see it with girls because with girls, they're even. I mean, even when you're thinking of like Mrs. Thénardier in Les Mis, like she even has to have some singing ability, even though her like. She has like a cockney-ish kind of voice, like
yeah. She still has a character voice, but she still has to have a good voice.
Right, exactly. That's what I was trying to say.
But I think the fact that they break this fourth wall and that there's only two characters that do, which I'm intrigued as to, like, I've tried to like in my mind kind of figure out why they've chosen these two characters to be the ones, because little Sally is like representing the poor and this town. And I feel like they picked her because she is the only one left that has kind of some hope for the future because of maybe her age or whatever it is about her, but she's trying to have hope. And then I'm trying to think of, like, if they picked Lockstock, I feel like he has to represent the other side. But he's an outside version. Like, he's not someone that's necessarily profiting the most from it, so maybe that's why they picked him. Like, I don't know. Maybe they just picked two people at random, but I'm trying
to
make
sense
of it.
I think that's a valid point, and I agree that it makes sense. Like, you want both sides represented, and but it's also, to me, this old, like, kind of storytelling, these two old storytelling trope roles where I think of The Princess Bride when you have the grandfather telling the story to the Fred Savage character. So you always have this, like, older figure telling, like, a young kid, this is how it was in my day. So I feel like they're using that trope to tell the story as well.
That's a good point. I also just like that they bring it into the song sometimes to break the fourth wall. Like, in
yes.
the opening song, how they're, like, doing, like, your ticket should say you're in town. Make
right.
sure you pee, like, before, like, there's no refunds. This is, like, it's, they keep making, reminding you this is a musical. This is a show we're putting on for you.
And I like the little, like, call forwards or call backs or jokey things where she's like, this is a terrible title, you know.
Well, it's true. Like, I mean, even if you think about with television and film, a title can, like, there might be shows, like, I've seen trailers and I'm like, this looks really good, like, wow, why isn't this getting more buzz? And then it's like, well, who would have thought that would have been good based on that title?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, classic example of a show that no one wanted to watch in the beginning because mostly because of the title.
Like, you have to wait for the hearsay to go around,
right.
word of mouth to go around before it to get popular. Because, and that's like, and sometimes networks aren't willing to wait that long for
yeah.
it to get popular. Same with Broadway. Like, sometimes a show is on stage for a month. People haven't heard about it yet. Maybe the title's just throwing them off. They don't know what it's about. Or whatever the case is, and they don't go see it. It gets cut, gets off Broadway, and it might have been a really amazing show to go see.
Yeah.
I think that they did it in the right way, that making it like something like urine, even though it's like a really gross title, it still is like intriguing enough to be like, hmm.
Well, I mean, it's just a really gross musical, but I mean, it does the same thing that Avenue Q does, which is like, it's like, okay, we're gonna just be completely obtuse, so we might as well just go all the way.
Might as well just keep going with this charade of peeing in the street and arresting people.
Right. I mean, if anything, I could see it opening up the door for musicals like Avenue Q or Book of Mormon, where you're just like, oh my, they did that, you know. I forgot. I had a point, and now I forgot.
By the way, the song you were talking about is just called Act One Finale.
Oh, maybe that's why I couldn't remember the title.
And then I was looking at the two, because Don't Be the Bunny is right before that, and Don't Be the Bunny is
such That has such an easy thing to remember, too. Like, there are a lot of titles in
this musical that are just literally exactly what they're saying.
Right, exactly what they're saying.
But Don't Be the Bunny, I wanted to remember to call out, because I remember listening to it when I first listened to this musical when I was going... Because when I went to go audition for it, I didn't know anything about the musical. And so I was listening to the soundtrack to kind of, like, try to figure this out. And Don't Be the Bunny stood out to me for some reason. It was partly his voice was singing it, But just like calling all these all these poor people bunnies that you can just shoot dead and they're just easy game.
Yeah.
And like her just kind of not getting it, like, bunnies don't drive cars.
Right, like, right.
In my head, she was much younger than she actually is.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, you have a little girl played by an older woman.
The problem is because they all have like the high voices.
Yeah, so you're having all these character actors playing these different roles. So
when you see it on stage, it makes like you can differentiate, right. But like just listening to it, I couldn't.
Right.
And so I thought she was like, oh, she's like a teenager. And then when I saw it, I was like, wait, she's like, I think she's supposed to be more like college age, like graduating college and joining the family business and stuff. Yeah.
But they're also poking fun at that like whole young ingenue type of.
Of role.
Role as well. Yeah.
We're going to pull up the Tony Award video in just a second, but right before we do, I'm going to just mention what it was nominated and won for. It won Best Book of a Musical, Best Original Score, and Best Direction of a Musical, and it was also nominated for Best Musical, Best Performance by a Leading Actor for John Cullum, Best Performance by a Leading Actress for Nancy Opel and for Jennifer Laura Thompson. Best Featured Actress for Spencer Caden, and Best Choreography and Best Orchestration was what it was all nominated for. So it got a pretty decent amount of nominations.
But it only won Best Book and Best Score.
And Best Direction.
Oh, and Best Direction.
So it won 3. So we're going to go ahead and pull up the Tony Award performance, and this will give you kind of like a little clue, key into, if you've only listened to the music before, of kind of what they do with the staging of it all.
Hello there.
I mean, he's really hard to
And welcome to Urinetown.
He was perfect.
Not the place, of course, the musical. Urinetown, the place is, it's sort of a mythical place, you understand? A bad place. A place, let's just say it's filled with symbolism and things like that.
Say, Officer Lockstock, is this what you tell the audience about the water shortage?
Whoa, there, little Sally, not all at once.
Oh, I guess you don't want to overload them with too much exposition, huh?
No, everything in its time, little Sally. You're too young to understand it now, but nothing can kill a show like too much exposition.
How about bad subject matter? Or a bad title, even. That could kill a show pretty good.
We've talked on long enough, I imagine. Enjoy the show, and welcome to Urinetown, the musical.
Friends, I know you're afraid. We're in the heat of battle.
And he has a great voice.
And in the heat.
I Hunter really, Foster.
The actual hotness of battle.
Like, I feel like Sutton, like, kind
the
of
cry of freedom
praise,
sounds something like.
He's a great actor and a great singer.
Run, freedom, run. Freedom, run away. My friend, you have to run, 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 run. Freedom, run away. That freedom sun will shine someday. Till then, you better run, 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 run. Freedom, run away. There's a trickle of sweat.
There's a trickle of sweat.
Dripping in your ear.
Dripping in your ear.
But still, you gotta run, 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 run. Freedom, run away. Now,
forget
don't you fret. Run away. There's a great big Gladwell on your chair.
Run, freedom, run.
And he put his henchmen on the trail.
Run, freedom, run.
Oh, I'm circling out the flash. Great big Gladwell's making tracks. You ain't no time to relax. You
run, run, freedom, run.
Run, freedom, run.
Run, freedom.
Freedom, run away.
Run, 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 run,
best part for any actor who plays this part. It's like the most fun.
I said freedom. I said freedom. I said freedom. Freedom.
But the title's still awful.
Yes, little Sally. Yes, it is.
Away! I don't know what it is about those Foster people's genes, but they can sure belt.
Yeah, they can.
Like, and their vocal cords are just built.
And with all the other cast members running in the background, I'm like, I would be out so out of breath.
That's what I'm saying, is like, that's why I just want like an exercise class that is a Broadway dance class where you just learn different routines, because you will always be in shape.
Yeah, that is so true.
Because the cardio
that is involved
is ridiculous. And then they sing on top of that.
Yes. I random side note, I appreciate that they killed Bobby Strong like before the end of the show. I always appreciate when that happens, except for in the play Carousel. Yeah. Which we will talk about in December.
But it's also funny to me because listening to the soundtrack, you don't find out that You're in Town is just death until that one song where he is about to be thrown off and he said, death is You're in Town.
Yeah, and I mean, you find out in the play.
In the play, you find it a lot
earlier because of the exposition where he's talking where Lockstock is
talking.
He's
like, I can't just say it, we just kill people.
Right, right.
Like, I'm like, when I first saw the play, I was just like, oh, wow. You know, you as an audience know a lot sooner
than
I thought you did.
It's not Brigadoon. It really isn't. They just kill people.
It's not a nice little fancy place with yellow rivers. Blech. Sorry. Every time he says that line in the show, I just, like, cringe because I just picture, like, Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but everything's urine instead of chocolate. And it's the most disturbing.
The land of pure imagination. Pure imagination.
Sterilization.
So at the end of the play, the town goes bad because they're all peeing in the river anyway.
I mean, the town goes bad. They have nothing left to drink. They starve basically to death because.
But I mean,
all so
part
poor.
Of me, this is another problem solving thing. I'm like, if Hope wouldn't have encouraged those people to be peeing in the river, we wouldn't have this problem.
Also, with Hope, they do not necessarily tell you what happens to her. You know that she meets a fate worse than her father's potentially.
Right.
So I'm like, did they not just throw her off a building? Like, maybe they drowned her in the
river.
Of pee.
Maybe.
I don't know what it is that they did to her, but we know it's something bad happens to her and she gets killed as well. Again, not a happy musical. They say it throughout it. Little Sally is always constantly saying, well, can't we do a happy musical next time?
Yeah. I mean, I do like that. She stands in for the audience in that respect, you know.
And also the whole thing of like, but the music's so happy.
Right, right.
Because it is. For such a dark premise and with everybody, like, a very Hamlet ending.
Right. It has a lot of very, like, upbeat music.
Yeah. Music is keeps you up, which I guess you have to have if you're doing a comedy.
Right.
Like we said last week, you can't have a comedy with sad music throughout the entire thing.
Right. Because, I mean, I guess, like, even Sweeney Todd, when the music gets kind of dark, there are still moments where you have
every musical
upticks.
Every musical, whether it's a comedy or a dramatic musical, and that's something I appreciate and love about them, is that there's always some sort of comedy. Even if it's the littlest hint, like Les Mis, you have the Thénardiers.
Right.
Which bring in this little hint of comedy. Because you need that after 3.5 hours of sitting and being sad. It's like you need a little bit of uplifting to you.
Every play does that. Even Shakespearean tragedies do that. Mm-hmm. They have comedic characters. So that,
like, when you go see a film, they'll sometimes have films that are 1 to 2 hour films that are completely
barraging
drama the entire.
You with sadness.
You're just gone. Like, at the end of it, you're just terribly sad. Like,
Schindler's List. That is very long and very depressing.
There are films that do that, but there's no musical that I've seen or that I know of that doesn't have at least a little bit of kind of comedic relief in it.
Right. And I feel like you almost have to, because you're, like, you are accepting the premise that people are, like, singing at you, and sometimes they're singing in, like, very absurd circumstances where you're, like, well, who would just go on the street singing that, you know? So you're already accepting kind of a goofy premise of, like, everybody singing, so.
Yeah. So let's bring it in. Did you have anything else you wanted to add on for You're in Town before we wrap it up?
No, I think that covered everything.
Okay. I want to move on to our Broadway news for the week.
Next week we're doing Wicked, everyone.
Yes, we are doing Wicked next week.
A musical that no one's ever heard of.
It's so obscure. A musical so obscure. So Stephen Sondheim came out last past week and spoke out about them creating a female Bobby for the upcoming Marion Elliott directed company, which was released before that she was wanting to have a female Bobby. Before I say what he said, what are your thoughts about that? About them taking that character?
I'm always, and this isn't just specific to company, but this is like, in any play, I'm always pro casting a female because I feel like women are given so few roles these days, and women are very versatile, so I think, why not? Why not? Why not spice it up a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I always, like, as long as you take on the challenge of, like, not just changing the character to a female, but actually, like, developing, okay, so how is this character if it's female? Because I don't think it's anything to just be like, oh, we're just going to flip it. Like,
well, I saw an all-female cast of Richard III where they basically did what the old dudes did back in the day, where it's like the women just played men. And it was understood that Richard wasn't...
This isn't just a woman playing a man. This is them taking Bobby and making it female.
Oh, I didn't understand that. Yeah. But that's fine.
So I think it's good. I'm excited that they're doing this and that... I'm intrigued as to, like, what about the character is going to change, and is it going to be like a female character that's still going to be in love with the girl, or are they going to make that a male? Like, I'm intrigued. I just don't know what's, it's exciting, but I don't know what's going to happen. The thing about theater as opposed to movies and television is it's malleable. What keeps theater alive is that every generation there are new actors to play Hamlet, shows are performed, and most important, directed by different people, and that keeps them alive. If you've got somebody as distinguished and inventive and as good as Marion Elliott, and she says, I would love to do company with a female central character, what is there to lose? It can only make the play either interesting or, if you dislike it, dislikable. But still, it's from Furring here, but the point is that's what keeps theater alive, so I'm always open.
That is a perfect response, because mm-hmm. I do feel like that is, I mean, that is what keeps theater alive. You don't just keep doing
the same thing over and over.
You want to bring something new to it. And that, I mean, that brings new audiences, too.
Like, and also, when you bring a revival of something that's already been done, you have to change it up somehow.
Yes, exactly. It's like you... for those people that might have seen the original cast, if they are going to be compelled to see the revival... there has to be something different, you know?
Yeah.
And it has to speak, you know, each play, I feel, has to speak to the time that you're doing it in, even if it is a revival. So you do have to make those changes.
Yeah, and like I said, it's like, this is such an exciting time for theater to be able to do this now, because I think, like, you know, there was a time not too long ago where if this happened, it would be an uproar kind of thing from certain people. And so it is exciting that we're doing this now and that we're being able to take these things that are envisioned by other people and make them kind of a different vision, but still the same show.
Right.
Also, this past week, it was announced that Alec Baldwin is going to star as Colonel Nathan Jessup in NBC's live presentation of Aaron Sorkin's courtroom, A Few Good Men.
I mean, Alec Baldwin is... a phenomenal actor, so...
I've only seen the movie, and I've only seen the movie once, and I believe that's... the character that now I'm blanking on his name from Shining.
Jack Nicholson,
thank you. Played, right?
Yes.
That's his
character.
Well,
you know what? It's been a long time.
I believe that's his character.
Yeah.
It's either because he's too old, I believe, to play the Tom Cruise character.
Yeah, he is too old to play the Tom Cruise
character. So it would have to be the Jack Nicholson one. It's interesting to me, this will be the first live one they did that's not a musical.
I like that. I'm very excited for people like me who can't sing very well, but who, you know, someone like Alec Baldwin, who's a great actor, that you'd want to see that. You'd want to see what their live acting mm-hmm. chops are. And we know that he can do it. He's done SNL for God knows how many times, and that show's live.
Yeah. So it's going to be...
not that A Few Good Men is hilarious. Just saying.
So funny. I'm trying to see if it has the date for when they're going to air it, but I can't. It just says that they talked about it in early
2017. Is he the only cast member they have right now?
It's the only one I've seen.
Oh, okay.
Says Tony nominee Scott Ellis was previously announced as the director of the live version, which was originally slated to premiere in early 2017. Obviously, that didn't happen because we're in middle to late 2017 now. And now it says a representative for NBC stated that a director hasn't yet been determined for the live presentation. So it looks like he's the only thing that we have right now. But makes I feel sense. Like when you start announcing the actors, then everything starts.
Yeah, and they usually, I mean, you usually want to snag your biggest box office draw actor at the beginning and like announce that to kind of like bring everybody else on board, or even do it as like some people do it to say, we got Alec Baldwin, can we get you, you know, that sort of thing.
It's like if you have one, you can get others.
Yes.
And then there is this news, which is I hadn't heard it before, but apparently there was rumors going around that Hugh Jackman was going to play Scar in the Lion King.
Oh my god, remake. I would love that.
They are false.
Oh no. The world doesn't like me.
Hugh Jackman will not be playing Scar.
Hugh Jackman live is amazing. I've seen him live doing like a Broadway review type of thing.
This, I believe, is the live animated.
No, I know it's the live animated one, but I'm just saying, like, if you ever get it, this is a sidebar. If you ever get a chance to see Hugh Jackman do live theater, take that chance. Let's just do that.
If you ever get the chance to see Hugh Jackman,
yeah, you will probably just be happy anyway. So.
Just go see
him. I don't know what my point is anymore.
If you stalk him to Disneyland,
I'm so mesmerized by Hugh Jackman.
Last weekend, apparently.
Which is, that was also sad for me because I have a year pass, and how did I not see Hugh Jackman?
I feel like that way all the time whenever I go to Disneyland, and then I see, like, later that, like, the day after I went, someone was there. I'm like, what?
I always see actors that I'm, like, not interested in, which is not to say that they're bad people. It's just, like, I don't care.
They're not your actors.
They're not
my
actors.
They're not the people that you would love to meet. So we still don't have a Scar for the live action announced, but it's not Hugh Jackman. It would be interesting to have him play a villain role.
It would be interesting to have him play a villain role.
Because I feel, at least from what I've seen, maybe he has and I just haven't seen it, but from what I've seen, he's only ever played, like, the dark hero.
Which I think could transition well into a villain role. Because, like, the way he has command of his voice, I think that he could do that very well.
Well,
although, I mean, I would love to see Jeremy Irons just redo his role.
That's the hard part about them taking these Disney movies that we grew up with.
Right.
And making them, renewing them, because we're so, like, stuck in our ways. And we're like, no, there's only Nathan Lane. There's only Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Who was Mufasa? James Earl Jones?
He's still playing James Earl Jones in the new one.
Oh, well, there you go.
They themselves thought no one else can play Mufasa.
You don't go from James Earl Jones to, like, someone else. That's why he's still doing...
It's, like, the same thing with the Urinetown thing. With, like, the voice. It's that voice.
Right. When you have a very distinctive voice, you can't... Like, it's very, very hard to go from this person's voice.
Well, that's my same problem with them hiring people that have distinctive voices in other ways. Like, in the live Jungle Book, having Christopher Walken... he has such a distinctible voice that watching him play like a character as a cartoon, like not a cartoon, but you know what I mean. It's like it doesn't read well for me.
That song was terrible that he sang in that movie.
I'm like, you chose one song to play in the entire movie, and this
it's
is what
so
it was.
Bad.
But
so
yeah,
bad.
But it's like when you have someone like that, it's like it takes me out of the film almost because I know it's Christopher Walken even when I can't see him.
Hmm.
So James Earl Jones has a different kind of distinguishable voice where it's, you know, it's James Earl Jones, but you only know him most of your life as someone that you didn't see.
Yeah, that's true, because he played Darth Vader, so
yeah. So it's like I grew up with Darth Vader and then Mufasa, so I never saw him like I couldn't visualize a person, just it was just this voice. So I'm okay with like people like that kind of distinguishable voice playing voice acting roles, but when it's people I can distinguish as a person, it takes me out of it.
You were just picturing Christopher walking in an ape suit, weren't you?
Basically.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. It wasn't a good thing. Let us know who you guys want to see play Scar. I can't think besides Jeremy Irons. I'll try to come up with a list, but I can't think of anyone at the moment. But anyone that you think that is current right now that would be good for Scar, let us know. And for the other characters that haven't been released for the Aladdin or for Lion King, that'd be, let us know who you want to see play. Where can they find you one last time,
Jackie? 123 Jackie B on all platforms.
And you guys can find me at BFIPS14 on Twitter and Instagram. And make sure you come back next week for Wicked. And we will see you then. Have a good week.
Longing for freedom. I see a river just
from producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.